The U.S. dollar has lost 85% of its value since the 70s, when the dollar decoupled from gold, and the government seems bent on continuing the tradition. Charlie Kirk here. From now until after the elections, the government can print as much money as they want. The last time they did that, inflation went up 9%. Gold is the only asset that has proven to withstand inflation. Invest in gold with Noble Gold Investments. You will get a 24-karat, 1/4 ounce gold standard coin for free. Just use promo code Kirk. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. On this program, we talk about Tucker Carlson with Chadwick Moore, who is the author of the new book, Tucker. And then Sean Davis talks about why most Republicans are gutless wonders. Become a member at members.charliekirk.com for some exclusive content, including this conversation with Tucker Carlson. Enjoy this.
I was watching the other day, I'm actually not a huge Martin Luther King fan or whatever, super flawed guy, but I was watching the audio of the last speech that he gave the night before he was killed. April 3rd, 1968, he was killed the next afternoon. And he gave this speech, and he had just been like cheating with a bunch of different women, okay?
Yeah, he had a tendency to
Oh my gosh! No, he was like sexually out of control. But he gave this speech in which he clearly predicted his own death. Like, there is no doubt, if you listen to this, that God is speaking through Martin Luther King. And again, I don't like Martin Luther King's program. I don't like his behavior. There's a lot of, worshiping Martin Luther King is absurd to me. But I got to say, if you listen to that speech, God is speaking through Martin Luther King. There's no other explanation for that. And you're like, well, that's kind of consistent with what we know. We're all flawed. The people in charge tend to be more flawed. But it doesn't mean that they're not capable of greatness. So let's just be honest about it. The second you have to feel the need to pretend that you're perfect, you become a liar, and you become paradoxically even less perfect, in my opinion.
You can listen to it in its entirety, members.charliekirk.com. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Very important book that is now out called Tucker. Tucker by Chadwick Moore, with a lot of inside information about the most powerful communicator post the death of Rush Limbaugh. That is 100% true. Chadwick, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Charlie, great to be back with you.
So tell us about the book. This has 21 chapters, exclusive in-depth information about America's favorite former cable news broadcaster. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, you know, it's different from a lot of other biographies, because I think it's about Tucker Carlson, the man, obviously, and he gave me unprecedented access. I spent a lot of time with him over the last year working on this book, and he hasn't seen a word, nor has he asked to. He's just totally trusted me and my judgment to tell his story, which is a great honor. But, you know, it's also about more than just him. It's about this time in history. It's about this movement. You know, there's a lot of sort of immediacy in the book. I was with him when a lot of things were unfolding. I really hope that readers walk away from it with a better insight into who Tucker is and where he came from and what he's like as a man, not just as a person on television or formerly on television.
Well, a question I get most frequently is, how's he been? And so walk us through what we know that's in the book of when it came down, when Fox News decided to cancel his show. How's he doing? How is he navigating the cease and desist letters that Fox News is sending? Give us the update.
Sure. Today, every time you see him, he seems like he's having the time of his life. He seems so happy. I think that this time away, he's been able to get a lot of perspective. He's been able to step away from the fray a bit and collect his thoughts. I interviewed him twice after a show was taken off the air for the book, and I've spoken to him several times since then. And he's very anxious to get back to work. You know, obviously he has his Twitter show, but that's not the same. with the cease and desist letters from Fox, well, they've, from what I understand, they've sort of backed off on those, because if they keep sending them, well, Tucker's just going to keep posting them online. And I think maybe for the first time ever, Fox has realized, well, first time in this drama, that they're digging themselves into a deeper hole by doing that, that it's really not a good look for them to be trying to silence the most influential voice on the right at the moment. So he seems to be doing great. He's certainly anxious to get his next thing going, but he's unfortunately still under contract with Fox. And he told me that obviously he'd like to get out from under that as quickly and as easily as possible.
So when you started this project, what was something that now with the book being published, book is called Tucker, everyone should check it out, that surprised you, that you learned about Tucker, his story, his biography, the way he does his work?
I think the level to which he's a very deeply literary man. He loves reading. He has a great appreciation for wonderful literature, great American literature, great Russian literature, anything you can think of, the great English writers. And he's first and foremost a writer, which I didn't think I really understood at first. You know, he got his start in literature, in magazine writing. He kind of stumbled into television. He's obviously a very talented and wonderful performer, but anyone who watched his show could tell that those A-block scripts, those famous monologues, were all Tucker. That's very much a creative outlet for him. Secondly, I think just the nature of, you know, it was very wonderful to see how strong his relationship with his wife is. It's very sort of a storybook love affair. They've been together since they were 15 years old. They are truly in love. As far as I could tell, watching them, it was really a delight to see that. And it's very special. His relationship with his wife and with his kids is probably the most precious thing in the world to him.
So let's go through just some of the chapters here. You know, you talk about how he's been involved in the movement for quite some time. Talk about the kind of philosophical development of Tucker Carlson. Like, you know, you could go find clips of Tucker 10 or 15 years ago advocating for a full-out invasion of Iraq, arguing that Cheney is telling us the truth. And now, 15 years later, it's the direct and polar opposite. And by the way, I've had, you know, intellectual and philosophical development, large in part thanks to Tucker, by the way. He's played such a profound role in that. But he's very open about this, but I'm sure you pinpoint this in the book. He used to be not just, you know, mildly enthusiastic, bow tie wearing, like full force cheerleader for neoconservatism. Certainly not that today. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's always been a kind of mischievous little scamp. He's always been a little rapscallion who likes to poke the bear and mess with people. That goes back to, you know, when he was in high school and even before then, which I get to write about in the book, some instances of that. And really his big shift away from beltway conservatism and neoconservatism was the Iraq War. He went to Iraq on assignment for Esquire magazine in 2003, where he was embedded with civilian contractors. And he was so horrified about what he saw there and what a disaster it was and what the Americans were doing and how they simply had no business being there. And he really marks that as being a huge shift away from neoconservatism, which he described as, after that experience, realizing they were just liberals with guns, the most dangerous kind of liberal. And since then, you know, he's really evolved more into this. He calls himself a civil libertarian. And is, you know, faith-wise, he's always been somewhat faithful. His wife, Susie, really got him more into faith when they met in high school because she was the daughter of a preacher. And but it seems like lately he's become much more spiritual. He was raised Episcopalian, but he doesn't really have, you know, theocratic language. He's not doesn't go by dogma necessarily. But even in the many conversations I had with him, there's a spiritual underlying to the way he sees the world. Not just the American political struggles, but, you know, nature and human nature and everything around that. I think that he's certainly become more galvanized on certain issues in the era of Trump, and more. He's a guy who came from Washington D.C. elites, you know, and now he's become a complete outcast and a kind of hero to the everyman, despite him having so many connections and knowledge of how Washington works.
So we're going to get this clip for the next segment. One of my most memorable Tucker Carlson moments from as a viewer was when they were teasing his new show. They announced it. O'Reilly went out, and it was the day after the election, and it was like 7 a.m. Eastern, a day after the 2016 election, and it was Wednesday morning, and it was on the couch, and they're like, oh, Tucker, come on in, because they had him scheduled, because they were teasing, like, next week, this thing called Tucker Carlson Tonight is going to be out. And Tucker, I think, had a 10 to 12 minute segment, which is one of the most profound pieces of television, I think, in the modern era, where the Fox and Friend hosts, Kilmeade, Ducey, and I think it was Ainsley at the time, they were genuinely looking for somebody to make sense of this, right? It was like shock and awe. It was political Pearl Harbor for the left-wing DC people. And Tucker was, I think, at that point, in my opinion, he either realized or didn't realize it, consciously or subconsciously, he became like the spokesperson for half the country that just spoke out in the ballot box. Can you help make sense of that, Chadwick?
Yeah, I remember that clip, and that's awesome you remember that, to bring that up. You know, as some NPR, no, I'm sorry, some PBS hack called him the high priest of Trumpism, which I think was meant to be an insult, but I don't think that is an insult. I think there's some kind of truth in that, to the extent that he really, you know, on his show, especially during the Trump presidency, he didn't really talk about Donald Trump a lot or directly, but he talked a ton about Trumpism and the things happening around Trump. He wasn't this sort of blind Trump cheerleader, but he clearly believed in the people who voted for Trump, and he understood why they voted for him, and by and large supported most of the things that they supported. I think that's a really key into his popularity over the last few years at Fox, how he became so popular under the network, was his understanding of the grievances of so much of the country and why Donald Trump won the election despite all odds and despite what everyone in Washington and New York thought was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, one of the secrets to his success as the cable, you know, as his show came online, was it was this remarkably articulate and deep way of translating and listening and then articulating what the elites considered to be nothing more than just white nationalist tribalism. And Tucker said, well, no, hold on a second. Let me explain this to you if you want to learn. The book is called Tucker by Chadwick Moore. I think you guys should check it out. Purchase the book Tucker, A Great Man. Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. We are saving babies with preborn by providing free ultrasounds. When you introduce a girl to her baby by providing an ultrasound, you're giving her the truth at the most important time in her life. And more than 85% of the time when she sees the baby and hears the baby's heartbeat, she will choose life. The voices that call themselves pro-choice are loud and proud, and they are everywhere. It might feel like an uphill battle, but there is no better fight to fight than with the truth of an ultrasound. $140 gives 5 mothers a free ultrasound and saves babies. $280 can save 10 babies. For just $28 a month, you can save a baby a month for less than a dollar a day. And $15,000 gift will provide an ultrasound machine that will save lives for years to come. Whether you want to save one baby or five or hundreds, that opportunity is just a phone call or click away. I'm a donor to Preborn, and you should be too. Call 833-850-BABY. That is 833-850-2229. Or go to preborn.org/Kirk. If you want to save one baby or five or hundreds, the opportunity is just right there. Go to preborn.org/Kirk.
President Obama told us 8 years ago, elections have consequences.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Have to get the
rest of it. Has big consequences.
The consequence for you being on this couch is you have wound up, as Brian mentioned earlier, with a brand new show. It's going to start Monday night. It's called Tucker Carlson Tonight.
What will we talk about? We'll be in D.C. I'll be the only person left in the city.
Yeah, because you've always been at a loss for words, right?
All right. Tucker, thank you very much.
Congratulations,
thank
Tucker.
Thank you, as always, Ainsley.
So most people in media are trash. They're degenerates. You know, they do not have really, I think, proper moral behavior. Tucker's a great man. He's honest. He's ethical. He's compassionate. He's fiercely loyal. He's always been there for me. And I'm honored to call him a friend, whereas most of the people in media are duplicitous and just awful. Chadwick, riff on that a little bit. Tucker Carlson is a decent man.
I would agree with your characterization of people in media, absolutely. And not only is he a decent guy, he's a hilarious guy, you know, as you can imagine, and in person and hanging out with him, you're just in stitches half the time. But he is truly a decent man. And, you know, I think that something interesting I found out when I got to interview some of these people for the book is the man gives his phone number to basically everyone who stops him on the street. It's sort of an amazing thing. And it's a big source of where he gets content for his shows. So I talked to, like, you know, waitresses, pilots, nurses, actors, just random people who had a random encounter with Tucker Carlson. And he gave them his phone number. And they text all the time. He always responds to everyone. He gets a lot of show ideas from there. He doesn't get content from his show from the New York Times. It's everyday average people. You can't imagine a lot of people in cable news being that way with the unwashed masses. You know, a lot of people in cable news have such an ego. Tucker doesn't have that. And one thing I saw that when I spent so much time with him is that he really goes through great lengths to humble himself, to remind himself every day that he's not God. Because when you're on cable news and you have that job, the job title is I am God. I'm right. You're wrong. I'm telling you about the world. And he steps away from his hour on television and reminds himself that he's not, that he's just a person like billions of others who've existed before him and will surely exist after him.
So talk about the impact that Tucker has made on the philosophical direction of the right. He moved the Overton window on things like war, the border, immigration, corporate power, the idea of chemical castration of children, you know, all just from little things to big things. Tucker Carlson, I believe, has, in a good way, radicalized the right.
I agree. And I think that one area where he's still working to move the right, he certainly has, I think, among average people, maybe not necessarily our leaders, is talking about beauty and talking about architecture and talking about environmentalism, not from a crazy green energy climate change perspective, but keeping a beautiful planet. You know, conservatives, in his view, are meant to conserve things. That's what the ideology is about. And yet we have leaders that have been said embrace this kind of libertarian idea that, as Tucker would say, the aesthetics of the dollar store are important and that we should all live in strip malls and horribly ugly environments. That's one of my favorite, personally, one of my favorite things about Tucker and writing this book was that unlike anyone else on television, he could talk about these things. He could talk about architecture and beauty in a way that nobody else could because he deeply cares about these things and believes in them. And he tries to push the Republican Party to embrace those things as well. I think with many Republican voters, you don't have to convince them. They already agree with that.
So Tucker has big plans. He said he's going to start a network. He's going to do all these things. What is going on? What does Tucker have planned for us? Because we have not heard the last of Tucker Carlson.
That's right. They are currently raising money to start their own network. Tucker's executive producer, Justin Wells, tells me that on this new venture, you're going to see a lot more Tucker than you ever saw on Fox News. They are unfortunately still under contract with Fox, not they, but Tucker. So they're trying to get out of that. We'll have to wait and see. But that's the information we have now. Until that happens, they're going to live on Twitter for a while. And so far, they're very happy with it.
Chadwick Moore, author of Tucker. Great work. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Tucker Carlson, night after night, has been the most successful window mover in the conservative movement of my lifetime. It is not even close. Issue after issue. Because it wasn't just the amount of people he was influencing, it's the lawmakers he was influencing, the influencers he was influencing, myself included. He moved me significantly on core issues that I used to parrot mindlessly. And he would say, why do you believe that? Is that actually smart? And he would do it in a very persuasive way. And I am forever indebted to Tucker Carlson for myself personally and my continuing, ongoing education in politics and economics and philosophy. And he has moved the Overton window. And boy, we need him right now. I could just say this. I'll editorialize. We need Tucker Carlson on the field for 2024. We need him in the arena. The Twitter thing is fine. We need him daily producing content. He's one of the last bulwarks for a free society. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. And like many of you, I'm a busy guy balancing family, show, travel, and TPUSA. When I needed a mortgage, I went to my friends Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian at Sierra Pacific. They were amazing. And look, I had some complicated stuff. Don't need to go into the details. They handled it personally. Call them if you have an aging family member, for example, that needs some financial relief. Ask them about a reverse mortgage. If you're self-employed and are finding it difficult to qualify because of that, they have my 100% full and complete endorsement. Call them and help you prepare. I'm telling you, anything mortgage related, please call them and not the big woke banks. Go to andrewandtodd.com. That's andrewandtodd.com. Fill out the quick form and they will get back to you with answers. Call them at 888-888-1172, andrewandtodd.com. They're good friends of mine. Full and complete endorsement. If you are a first-time home buyer renting and want to be, they'll call and help you prepare. Check it out, andrewandtodd.com. That is andrewandtodd.com. Fill out the quick form and they'll get you back with answers, andrewandtodd.com. to kind of continue on this, by the way, Donald Trump will be arraigned any second now. Will Hurd running for the presidency, CIA agent, play cut 19.
All right, we've heard the evidence. We've heard him call the Georgia Secretary of State and say, and ask this Georgia Secretary of State to do an illegal action. So there just should be consequences. And this is the kind of baggage that 6 out of 10 Americans don't want to see in an election, because 6 out of 10 Americans don't want to see Donald Trump be the Republican nominee.
Joining us now is Sean Davis. Sean, how should conservatives react to the arraignment, indictment of Donald Trump?
They should be shocked and appalled and enraged. And the first thing you really have to do is put out of your mind that it's about Donald Trump. It doesn't matter if you love Donald Trump or you hate Donald Trump. What matters is that we have a completely corrupt and lawless Department of Justice working on behalf of the regime, trying to imprison its primary political opponent for the crime of having said things that the ruling regime doesn't agree with. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not just shredding the Constitution. That's pouring $4 a gallon gas on it and lighting it on fire and dancing around it. It is a huge problem. It's not about politics. It's about whether we get to have a republic and a rule of law going forward.
Yeah. And currently the question is no, is it unfair to say, Sean, that the republic is largely dead?
I don't know if we're there yet, but it certainly seems like it might be on life support. I mean, just look at what this government has done in the last couple of years. It spied on a president. It lied about him. It lied to federal courts to get illegal warrants to spy on him and his campaign. It shut down discussion of topics it didn't like. It had the CIA and its little spider web of agencies censor news about a laptop that implicated the current president in corruption. It locked us in our homes. It fired us from our jobs for not getting a shot that didn't work. We're getting pretty close to the republic about being done. And in a lawless law enforcement agency going after their political opponent and putting him in prison because he said things they didn't agree with, that's the end. Like, if that can be allowed to happen, we don't have a republic anymore. We have an oligarchy.
Yeah, and not only can it be allowed to happen, the entire New York Times editorial page, I'll read that. I mean, I have the New York Times right here. Let me read you a headline here. They say two things. This is what the New York Times says. A president accused of betraying his country. And then, what makes Jack Smith's case so smart? That's the New York Times. So not only is it okay, it wins you praise. Half-page article in the New York Times. The indictment's strength lies as much in what it charges as in what it doesn't. So it's like some sort of hidden secret code, Sean. Your reaction?
Well, they're correct. It you learn a lot about what the department charges and what it doesn't. Let's look at who they're not charging for nonsense, for being a foreign agent, for influence peddling. They're not charging Joe Biden's dirtbag son. Who we have dead to rights, according to his own writings, his own laptops, his bank account records, his own business partner in Devin Archer, selling influence and selling out the U.S. government mm-hmm. so that he and daddy could get cash for it. That's not getting charged. In fact, he's getting a sweetheart plea deal where they make it all go away and he doesn't do any prison time so that they can protect Joe. So, yeah, I will say the New York Times is right in that regard. You can learn a lot about a government by what it charges and what it doesn't charge.
Yeah, and it's not charging the most obvious crimes. And this is one of them. They have people in the D.C. gulag. They have people all across the board. So what can be done about it? I mean, I have lawmakers on and they say, you know, we're going to try to defund the DOJ. It's just not going to happen, Sean. It should, but it seems like as if there's very little appetite. Are these lawmakers afraid? What exactly are they afraid of? Why are we still funding Jack Smith? Why are Republicans putting up with this?
Yeah, we have a problem where so many Republicans, it seems the bulk of the party and certainly its leadership, they're terrified of their own shadows. They don't have any balls and they don't have any spine. And so they go and they negotiate with themselves and decide, oh, we're not going to do anything that works. We're going to send out sternly worded letters and tweets. And the advice I would give to them is look at how we won the Cold War. We didn't win the Cold War by saying, you know what, Russia's bad, the Soviet Union's bad. And if they nuke us, we're not going to return in kind because that just wouldn't accomplish anything. We looked at them and we said, if you even so much as look in our direction, we will nuke you and everything you love to the point that people will not be talking about you for thousands of years because we will have wiped your memory from the earth. That's how Republicans have to approach this, because that's how Democrats approach this. Republicans send out sternly worded tweets, and Democrats go and they try to put their chief political opponents in prison. So the first thing they needed to do is go in and impeach Merrick Garland immediately. I don't even know why that hasn't been done yet. It's such an obvious thing to do. The man is a total crook. He's operating as the barrier to the Biden administration Stasi. And they need to go in there and they need to put him on trial and they need to try to remove him from office. And I don't particularly care if they succeed or not, because they did it to Trump twice. They're going to do it to everyone who wins that they don't like. And that's actually the one thing you can do to force the media to pay attention. They can ignore stuff like Devin Archer testifying. They can ignore the Hunter Biden laptop. They cannot ignore their top law enforcement apparatchik being put on trial for probably weeks at a time. So that's the first thing they should do at a bare minimum. And when that's mm-hmm. done and they've gotten their sea legs, they should go and impeach Joe Biden next for obvious reasons. He's a corrupt crook.
Yeah, they're not going to do any of that. But no, it's good to talk about. But they're not going to do that. So what do you have to say to the argument that some of these state attorney generals should start indicting Democrats or investigating them? It's perplexing to me why we don't have any current. I mean, let me give you a great example, Sean, something you guys covered beautifully in The Federalist, the outright charitable fraud of BLM. OK, it's obvious, right? A bunch of black lesbians get really rich off of white liberal donors, right? Over $100 million flows into BLM and they outright charitable fraud. So isn't it just like a little bit of just give us something, right? Just give us a little bit something, you know, state AG in Montana or Arkansas or Alabama. Why don't they do that? Why has there not been a single single indictment of just that one? And it's not as if BLM is some fringe group. They were the state-run religion during Floydapalooza.
Yeah, it gets back to the same answer, that the Republican leadership class, by and large, is a bunch of cowards. They enjoy the perks of power, and they enjoy being in there, and they enjoy patting themselves on the back and saying, we're not like them, we're not icky, we don't play politics. Well, yeah, that's why you're a bunch of losers, and it's why you're losing, and it's why we're losing our country. So I think change actually begins with Republican voters. We have to demand a much better class of leader in the Republican Party, and we got to stop sending back these idiots who just want to go up there and show up on TV and talk tough. And send out mean tweets and call that the end. Like, we actually need people who do their jobs. And I'm with you. Like, once Alvin Bragg went and said, Donald Trump, I'm going to try and put you in prison because you didn't commit federal campaign finance fraud in a private legal settlement.
Yep.
Every single Republican DA and AG in the country should be looking to find someone. They should be looking for a scalp and a head to put on a pike. And you're right, they're not. And it's enraging.
Well, and I've talked to, like, for example, I talked to a couple attorney generals over the weekend, because they all, you know, AG stands for aspiring governor, right? So they all ask for our endorsement and our help. And I say, okay, how many Democrats have you indicted? They say, well, Charlie, we don't look at our lens through political stuff and, you know, really commitment to the rule of law. I said, yeah, you're a waste of time. Sorry. I hope you don't become governor. Like, how many Democrats? I mean, just start with BLM. By the way, BLM had donors from all 50 states. So there's jurisdiction in every state, right? And by the way, you might say, oh, Charlie, you know, what's the precedent? They're going after Steve Bannon on the We Build the Wall stuff on a remarkably flimsy case of charitable fraud, where they actually did build a wall. And, you know, there's some weird stuff in that. The point is they shouldn't go to jail for it. OK, maybe pay a fine or whatever. They're going to jail on state based crimes. Steve Bannon still has to stand trial for that. And meanwhile, we can't even lay a glove on Antifa, BLM, any of the. BLM is the number one thing, and I know I'm just like a dog with a bone with this. I don't get any reaction because, Sean, I think deep down Republicans are comfortable losing. Is that right? I think that it's the Mike Pence syndrome. I want to be a protected loser, controlled opposition, get me a book deal. I'll look stoically into the distance while I will be known as the guy that lost nobly while the country was incinerated by degenerate Marxists.
Yeah, you're exactly right. They're the Washington Generals to the Democrats' Harlem Globetrotters. I wrote about this like 15 years ago, 14 years ago during the Obamacare nonsense in the Senate when McConnell and Cornyn decided, oh, no, we're going to let them pass it. We're going to have some good amendments to make it look bad, and then we'll run against it. And the problem is these idiots, they don't actually want to win. They want to beat the spread. They want to go out there and say, you know what? We did better than the other side thought we would. Sure, we lost, but we lost with our virtue and with our dignity. They're not interested in winning. And I'll tell you, quite honestly, I'm not interested in a party or members of that party who aren't interested in winning, because winning is all there is in politics. Because when you lose, this is what happens. You get people like Mark Houck getting thrown in prison, being tried on federal charges because he prayed outside of an abortion clinic. OK, you get kids in Wisconsin hauled away by cops because they were preaching the gospel at a public event. Like, this is insane. So the thing is, you either understand that the entire republic is at risk and that all of our freedoms are at stake right now, or you're worthless. That's the litmus test now for whether you should be elected to anything, is whether you understand what time it is in America right now.
Well, they don't know what time it is. In fact, they think it's time for re-election or for me to get in office. And so what is it on the left? Why is it that they almost reward the... Like, they almost sent out rewards for how many people they can indict on the left. Look, I don't enjoy this, but it's not going to stop until they fear the knock on the door, too.
That's it. It's mutually assured destruction. And I wish more than anyone that we could go back to a time where we only looked at the law, where we had one standard of justice,
yep,
where there weren't different rules based on different people. But I'm sorry, that time is over. Like, it's gone. I wish we could bring it back, but we're sure as hell not bringing it back until the other side feels the same pain that they're inflicting on us. And to believe that somehow we can just pat ourselves on the back and say, well, we're better than them, and magically everything will go back to, you know, it's going to be 2002 again. It's insanity.
Yeah, well, most Republican office holders, they are gutless wonders. They have zero spine, and they do the, well, at least it's not me. As long as it's not me, it's not me. It's unbelievably disappointing. There is not an opposition party in this country. Hey, Charlie Kirk here. If you guys love this program and you want to support this program, if we have impacted or blessed your life in any way, I want to tell you about a new thing that we are starting it up. First of all, if you have supported us at charliekirk.com/support, nothing to worry about. You guys are going to be moved on over. If you want to support us even more and say, hey, I want exclusive content, I want to talk to Charlie directly, we are standing up this amazing infrastructure. Team's been working so hard at members.charliekirk.com. Not only is it a way to support us directly outside of all of the other channels, but get this, live Q&As with me and the team, articles exclusively written by me that you won't find anywhere else, pre-show prep calls, and more. Sign up today at members.charliekirk.com. We love bringing our show every day, and we can't wait to bring you even more content that is just for you at the Charlie Kirk exclusive. That's members.charliekirk.com. Head to members.charliekirk.com today. Yes, there's going to be a lot of goodies, a lot of engagement, a lot of fun stuff. But even more than that, if you feel moved and compelled that our show is impacting you and impacting the world, it would mean a lot if you became a member at members.charliekirk.com. Your tweet, Sean, is very interesting, which really inspired us, about relitigating the 2020 election, since Jack Smith's indictment seems to criminalize Trump's ability to redress his grievances. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this indictment is a total assault on the First Amendment. It's assault on the Fourth Amendment. It's assault on us being able to vote. And it just kind of blows my mind, given all the whining from the left about democracy this and democracy that, democracy dies in darkness. They're taking a gun to democracy's head and they're pulling the trigger with this indictment, because how on earth can you possibly have a country if you can't even say, hey, I'm going to follow the exact process for adjudicating election dispute, and then have them say, yeah, that's actually a federal crime now. You get to go to prison.
Yeah, I mean, you have a really brilliant tweet here that I want to read. The 2020 election was rigged, and they're trying to throw Trump in prison before the 2024 election because they're not confident they'll be able to rig that one. And so let me ask you, Sean, just kind of looking at all the Republican contenders, are you impressed or disappointed generally by how Republicans running for the presidency have reacted to the administrative state striking Donald Trump?
Yeah, I've been, you know, fairly disappointed with the primary campaign writ large, because from my view, the only thing that matters right now is taking down the completely corrupt deep state, administrative state, whatever you want to call it. We have this entire cabal of people who have no accountability, were elected by no one, can't be fired, but they have all this power. You can't have a country with that. And so, mm-hmm. Look, I care about the border. I care about taxes. I care about gas prices, all that stuff. But unless you can actually have a functioning rule of law where people are able to control their own government, you don't have a country. And I've just been kind of annoyed in general at the whole primary field that doesn't seem to grasp that we're facing an existential crisis right now. And I get that a lot of them don't like Trump. Trump's not perfect. I get that. None of us is. You got to move past whether you love Trump or hate Trump and actually address the root problem here, because the left is taking advantage of people's hatred of Trump to ram through things that will forever change the nature of the country and that we'll never be able to get back ever again.
Yeah, criminalizing the First Amendment and obliterating the First Amendment being chief among them. I want to play a piece of tape here and get your reaction. This is a narrative that is growing, Sean, comparing half the country, not just comparing, but saying this is Al-Qaeda, ISIS. It's extraordinary. This is happening on multiple cable networks with multiple different types of people, obviously coordinated and symmetrical messaging to try to justify a Patriot Act 2.0. Play cut 128.
When I first learned about the indictment, I had a long conversation with a friend of mine, Ryan Riley, and I told him how proud I felt to be an American at that moment, much in the way that I did when I learned that our military had killed Osama bin Laden. I just felt incredibly proud. Osama bin Laden was a terrorist who committed a horrific act against American people and against our republic. And I believe that Donald Trump is a terrorist who committed horrific acts against the American people.
Sean Davis, your reaction, final thoughts.
I actually appreciate how honest that guy is, because he perfectly shows the left-wing psychosis. They actually think beating Hillary Clinton is the same as flying a bunch of planes into buildings and killing 3,000 people. That I mean, he could not have been more honest about it, and I'm thankful for it. I mean, he's a psycho, and that's total nut job thinking. But that's where we are with the left now. They actually believe that. And it reminds me of something my friend Dave Riboy says, which is that the left doesn't have foreign enemies. They only have domestic enemies. And you and I and everyone who thinks like us, we are their true enemies. And they're not going to stop until they have us under their boot.
Yep, that's right. They want us all in jail, so we should throw them in jail. It's that simple. There is no other way. There is no third option. There is no settlement. They must fear us. We need to start putting powerful Democrats in jail and start going after the criminals that brag about their criminal activity. Republican attorney generals and DAs have been one of the great disappointments of 2023. Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
You've spoken and we've heard you loud and clear. We're proud to announce our brand new ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. Our legal teams will be focusing on the issues that you, our ACLJ members, have told us matter the most to you: life and religious liberty. We're redoubling our efforts to beat back the radical left's attack on your constitutional religious freedoms and to defend the sanctity of human life. This is your moment to get in the fight. Every tax-deductible gift will be doubled. Join the ACLJ in the fight to keep America free.